Western Oregon is higher.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 18th, 2017 meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation. We are here today to consider amendments to Senate Bill 1057. And we have some people who are signed up to provide testimony. The first thing that we're going to do is have our committee administrator, Adam Crawford, describe the main features of the Dash 14 amendment, and then also briefly describe the other amendments that have come onto OLIS, the Oregon Legislative Information System, in the last couple of hours. So folks in the room or listening but who don't have access to that computer system will have a rough sense of how the landscape has changed since we were last together. So with that, Mr. Crawford, could you describe for us the Dash 14 amendment and then the other amendments briefly that have come onto OLIS?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 14 amendments are a combined amendment. They contain the Dash 1 amendments from the previous meeting, the Dash 2. The Dash 1 amendments were primarily technical in nature. The Dash 2 required tracking for all OLCC and OHA registrants related to the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. The Dash 4 amendments, these were distance requirement amendments related to how close you could put a dispensary near a school. The Dash 8 requirements, adding two additional commissioners to the Oregon Liquor and Control Commission. The Dash 9 amendments, these allowed a federally recognized tribal ID to be used to purchase marijuana, as well as the Dash 10 amendments, creating a special exemption for OLCC licensees to transport an exhibit at the 2017 Oregon State Fair. Within the last half hour or so, we have received an additional six amendments. While I haven't had a chance to analyze those in detail, I can give you a thumbnail sketch of them. The Dash 15 amendments create provisions allowing cardholders and caregivers three times the number of immature medical marijuana plants as mature. In the Dash 14 amendments, it's two times the number of immature medical marijuana plants. For the Dash 16s, we create a advisory committee on medical marijuana within OHA. Three of the 11 committee members must be OMMP registrants, and establishes authorities and activities of the advisory committee on medical marijuana. The Dash 17 amendments put a $60 cap on OMMP registration. The Dash 18 amendments create an expedited caregiver process for an OMMP registrant if the caregiver is caring for somebody with chemo, dementia, or cancer. The Dash 19 amendments create a task force for the consolidation of the regulatory marijuana programs. And the Dash 20 amendments create an alternative tracking system for tracking marijuana transaction and provides tracking specifications.
All right. That's really helpful. So I have signed up about 10 people, a little fewer than 10 people, and I'm going to call people sort of in alternating groups. Let's start, please, with Andrew Anderson, Matt Cyrus, and Douglas Brussen, please. And you can come forward and speak in any order, but just please begin by stating your name for the record.
My name is Andrew Anderson. I'm from Deschutes County. I'm a producer, processor, and retailer. I'm here today. Most of you have probably received a binder I dropped by. It's about roughly 134 pages of issues we've had in Deschutes County. They range from lighting, odor, and noise to not being able to get the right ag exemptions. There was also a letter after I testified last Tuesday that was sent from our county commissioners to the committee saying that some of the stuff that I think I said was inaccurate. These binders show the burden of proof that there's 10 floor plans that include all the building plans for marijuana production facilities and retailers in the county. It basically shows that anyone that goes on the public Dial Deschutes website or another website, the ACA that they put it on, can see our floor plans. They can see where our cash rooms are. They can see where our safes are. They can see everything. And I thought, you know, like Senator Brzezinski had said, that that was against state law. Deschutes County said that they didn't have never done that. But you'll see in these binders, there's 10 attached URLs from their website showing the floor plans. So that's one of our main concerns. We've also applied or included a 92-page example of an application for Deschutes County just in order to obtain a LUX for a production marijuana facility. And we feel that 92 pages for an application is a little unreasonable on top of the OLCC application that you have to do after that. I'm also submitting to the record a land use application.
And I'm going to jump in. If you could just lean back from the mic so you've got about 12 inches, then we can hear you even more clearly.
All right.
Thanks so much.
I've also included a land use application from Lane County. That's 6 pages. And from people I've talked to there, you know, have walked in and out with 45-minute, you know, having a LUX, where we're experiencing, you know, 3 to 6 month periods to get a LUX if you're lucky, and you're not put to a public hearing, which I think there's a third public hearing in a row tonight in Deschutes County for these exact issues. Yeah, I guess that's all I really have.
Great. Thank you so much. And thanks for those really well-organized binders describing the situation that you've been encountering. That was really helpful.
Good evening, chairs, committee members. My name is Matt Cyrus. I'm from Deschutes County, here representing Deschutes County Farm Bureau, as well as the Oregon Family Farm Association. I came before you a year ago and asked the committee to please consider allowing a limited of the right to farm ordinance so that we could put some of this in place and we could try and see what we could do with some ordinances, with some restrictions on it, some exemptions from the right to farm, which allows a pretty free flow of agricultural uses. I can now say a year later that that was a big mistake. Deschutes County, you know, we gave them an inch and they took 2 miles. Some of the restrictions that they put in place are so draconian that while they did opt in, the restrictions they put in place make it almost impossible for somebody to operate. So, you know, I'm asking actually for consideration of the Dash 11 amendments, whether it be in this bill or move forward on its own, but at least to consider those, repeal at least part of that carve-out. What we're asking for is that the state recognized that this crop is an agricultural crop, that it be given the same afforded the same regulations and opportunities of any other crop in the state. There is no, for example, mint is far more aromatic than any marijuana plant I've ever been around or seen. Some people love the smell of mint, others hate it. Are we going to now start allowing counties to regulate whether or not mint can be allowed to be planted, or dairy, or any number of other commodities based on a county-by-county basis? And so, you know, I'm very concerned that Deschutes County took the opportunity to put some of the restrictions they did. The noise, for example, limitations on a greenhouse is lower than what a sprinkler sound makes. Are they going to come after me, Bailey? Hey, next. For example, the lighting, they've already expanded to other crops. Greenhouses, they're now, our county has now said that the limitation on lighting applies to all crops, not just marijuana. So even the guys that are, if they get shot down on a LUX in Deschutes County, they can't raise lettuce or tomatoes in their greenhouse because they're not allowed to have supplemental lighting. So I just, Like I say, I'm very concerned about the slippery slope we're headed down. I think it was a big mistake for us to ask for the carve out on the right to farm, and I would ask you guys to help us plug that hole. Not asking to reverse some of the restrictions for sale, but for at least production and on-farm processing in the EFU zone. I mean, if we're restricted from doing anything else with our farm, let us at least farm it and not restrict what crops we can do. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have questions for these witnesses? Representative Helm and Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. As you said, it's nice to see you both again, by the way. And as you said, 2016, we approved this limited exception to the right to farm. And then can you tell me initially, before the election, how are things going toward planning a rational ordinance along these lines? Was the county able to start that during the summer? Was it going okay? And what happened after the election?
You want to take it?
Go for it.
Well, the county actually put together a marijuana advisory committee, of which both of us sat on, along with 11 other participants, individuals both pro, con, those that were neutral, such as myself. My dog in the fight is from a philosophical standpoint on agriculture and right to farm. I was on that committee. We put together, it was a consensus type building group. We had a facilitator. We worked through a lot of the issues, a lot of the possibilities, rules, regulations. There were a few things we got consensus on. There were a number of things that were a vast majority on one side, typically erred on the side of lesser regulation. But the county tended to follow the minority report, and which wasn't nearly as friendly toward production. In our county, there's a lot of rural residences within the EFU zones, and people that don't understand that an agricultural zone is essentially an industrial zone for ag production, and seem to think that they can expect pristine, quiet, you know, blissful living in a agriculture area. But what happened then is the county then had hearings. Folks with their million-dollar house on their 5 acres all showed up and decided that they didn't want production agriculture next door. And the commissioners bowed to the political pressure and adopted rules, for example, the land use process that is statutorily illegal. But they applied some of those without ever having any discussion of the MAC committee. Some of the rules, the first time we saw them, were when they were in print. And so yeah, things did change, not necessarily so much after the election, but throughout the whole process. They just, it seemed like we spent a lot of time discussing a lot of issues that were completely ignored.
Do you have a follow-up?
Did I cover what you were looking for?
Pretty much. If I could just follow more of a comment. We discussed this in 2016 very thoroughly in this committee, and then again on the floor when the bills passed, about whether we are going to tolerate time, manner, and place regulations within EFU zones. And we thought that we were providing a reasonable avenue for reasonable counties to allow marijuana production on EFU lands. And we warned the counties that if they abused that permission in a way that effectively prohibited marijuana businesses from locating on EFU lands, while still opting into getting some of the tax revenue, that we would come back and either tell them what reasonable was, which is not something that I think anybody wants the state legislature telling the counties on land use what's reasonable and what's not, or withdrawing the permission. And I'll just tell you folks, and I don't know when I'll have a chance to say this again, so I'm going to say it now, I am really, really angry about this. This is not what we intended. This is an abuse. The notice requirements that this county is imposing on ordinary law-abiding business people on the location of their cannabis farms is absolutely egregious. They're putting people at risk for their lives. I visited Jeremy Klatke at his facility, at his home, which happens to be in rural Deschutes County. And he lives in an area where it's a mixed area where there's a lot of really nice people, and that there's a lot of people who don't want the law to find them. And we are putting his family, who many of us have met, at risk by continuing to allow this type of carve-out, because the county is telling everyone exactly where they live and exactly what they're doing, and maybe exactly where their crop is in their building, maybe exactly where their safe is. That's not what I signed up for. It's not what I signed up for.
That's a really important point. Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Helm stole my stump speech there, but well done. Thank you. It would be impossible to improve on that. Let me only say that I'm glad we have the Dash 11s in hand. I truly am. Thank you.
So, you know, Madam Chair, this is, Andrew shared this with us. This is evidence of man's verdict right there.
Yeah. Thank you. Any additional comments on that? All right. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Helping us understand what a really problematic situation exists. Now, I'm going to invite forward, is Douglas Bruson here?
Bryson,
hi.
Sorry, I'm running late. I came from Ben.
Yes, well, thank you for being here. I'm going to invite you forward because I know you want to talk about the Dash 11s. And then, so please come forward and give your comments. And then we're actually going to go to Anthony Taylor and Cindy Etzel, who present a different view about House Senate Bill 1057, but are not necessarily talking to the Dash 11. So welcome. And then we'll move back to a panel of people who want to speak basically in support of 1057.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Leininger and the entire committee. My name is Doug Bryson, and I grew up on a farm. I had the opportunity to go to university on a athletic scholarship and the further opportunity to go to law school right here in Salem at Willamette University. I worked for one of the top firms in the Northwest at Schwabe Williamson & Wyatt, and ultimately I became a cannabis farmer, and very proudly so. Proud of the work that I do, and I'm proud of the product that I create. What all we're trying to do is create a workable system in Deschutes County in particular, but around the state, where we can produce a quality product that helps our patients and adult users. And so ultimately, you know, we've faced a very high bar in Deschutes County. We are an exclusive farm use area, and we're facing a lot of time, place, and manner restrictions over the methods that we utilize to grow our crops, which are agricultural crops. Right now in Deschutes County, in order to get an appointment to go in for a land use compatibility statement, takes about 3 weeks for the pre-appointment. Once the LUX application is completely filled out, all the boxes checked, there's about a 12-week timeline to get a LUX. In the city of Bend, it takes 20 minutes. You show up, the city signs your paper while you're standing there, and you go on about your business. Some of the time, place, and manner restrictions that we have now in Deschutes County require, in the rest of the state, we're allowed to have is a tier two farm. We're allowed to have 40,000 square feet of flowering canopy. In Deschutes County, we've got 30 acres, but they've decided that in order to have a tier two 40,000 square foot flowering canopy, which is about 1 acre, You have to have more than 40 acres. So we can have a maximum of 10,000 square feet of flowering canopy, which impacts our business quite significantly. We have many, many usable acres, which we cannot use to grow our crops. Additionally, they have placed a restriction. We have a legal easement across one of our neighbor's properties for a driveway for approximately 100 feet. We have to go to that neighbor and ask their permission that we can conduct our farming business on our farm and exclusive farm use areas. And that requires perhaps spending many thousands of dollars to convince that neighbor that they should sign a waiver that will allow us to permanently use that easement, which we legally own, to access our property. So there are a number of other restrictions that have gone into place. The inability to use our lights in our greenhouses to grow our crops. So we don't have access to utilize lights for growing our crops for many hours of the day, and our crops require specific photo periods in order to grow properly. So it is often necessary to add supplemental lighting in order to be able to grow our crops properly. Those have also been blocked. Some of the other things that you've probably heard are occasionally we get imposition of onerous fire regulations in a greenhouse, that some of the plans for our properties are made public, which shouldn't be done. So, you know, I've done full circle in my life. I've returned to farming. I find it an excellent career, and I'm very happy to be doing it. But all we're asking as farmers is that we are under the same restrictions that other farms are that produce crops for public use. And so that's what we're asking here today, is put us on an equal footing. We're a farm business. We're in exclusive farm use areas. Allow us to operate as a farm and do our business and help Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I would like to call forward Rob Bovet, please, who I know works with counties, including Deschutes County. Mr. Bryson?
Yes.
Hang on just one second. Do we
sure,
have any questions for Mr. Bryson? I know we had a chance to share some members shared their thoughts about the general situation. Looks like we don't have anyone who needs to ask you specific questions, but thank you for bringing that perspective. It's really helpful to have the range of perspectives that you provide.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Bovet, if you could come forward and address the Dash 11 amendments issue and specifically the Deschutes County issue. I know that you may be working with that member of your association. And if you could provide us an update on what you see from your perspective, that would be useful as we try to formulate appropriate next steps.
Sure. Co-Chair Leininger and members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovett, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties. Obviously, I've been hearing a lot about Deschutes County for a number of years now. So as I promised the co-chair as I would, I've taken the initiative to try to set up a work group to meet next week of the stakeholders and bringing over folks from Deschutes County to see if we can talk through some of these issues. It seems to be a Deschutes County-centric thing. The Dash 11s, of course, as I previously testified, we are strongly opposed to because it's a blunt instrument. It would not only wipe out time, place, and manner in EFU, which I think is working well in many counties, it would also essentially make opt-out counties opt-in. So it would undo votes in a lot of counties. So we can't support the Dash 11s for those reasons. If it was refined a lot more, it would be better. But what we would like the opportunity to do is try to work through the Deschutes County problem next week and see if we can actually get some movement. What that involves, I'm not exactly sure. I know Deschutes County takes issues with some of the things that have been said here last week. I suspect they may take some issue with some of the things that were said here tonight. But I think we need to get everybody in a room. We need to talk this out. So I'm hoping to do that next week.
Thank you. Do we have questions for Mr. Bovet? Representative Fahey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So have there been previous attempts to have this kind of conversation with Deschutes County?
Co-Chair Leininger, Representative Fahey, yes, but they've mostly been in Deschutes County. It will be new this time because I made a personal commitment to the Farm Bureau and to the co-chairs that I would intervene.
Do you have a follow-up to that?
Sure.
Okay. And then after you are done, we'll go to Representative Helm.
Is it your sense that you intervening is the thing that will be different about that conversation this time?
Co-Chair Leininger, Representative Fahey, that would make me sound really arrogant.
I mean, my question is, what will be different this time?
What will be different in this time is, I think, well, we've heard a number of things have changed. The Farm Bureau has changed their position affirmatively. So they're no longer in the place they were even last year. The meeting will be here, and the stage is different because of what you have heard. So I think a lot of things have changed since last year. And the message heard from Representative Helm has been heard. So I think things are different.
Thank you. Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And Rob, thanks for your efforts. And I remember that several of us tried to negotiate this through in 2016, and it was with your help that we had rational meeting of the minds on it. And I'll just state for the record that during that time, I had many excellent conversations with Commissioner Alan Unger. And he understood land use very well, having been a planning commissioner for several years in Redmond. And I had great confidence that he understood how to do this right. And what I'm concerned about, and I'll pass it on here, is that we don't just have a problem of sort of satisfying the existing problem in Deschutes County. It's an example of how county commissions change once in a while, as do city councils. And with those changes, you have different perspectives. And sometimes those different perspectives attempt to apply the land use laws a little bit differently. And I guess, you know, that's part of the planning process. But if we are going to fix this, I guess I would suggest that I'd like to see a fix that is a little more institutionalized and maybe something we could consider here again that would prevent this kind of problem in other counties from occurring. And you know that I don't really want to go down the path of identifying what is the proper time, manner, and place sideboards for counties to consider here. But this problem begs the question.
Co-Chair Leininger and Representative Helm, I understand. I get it. But also keep in mind the context in which this arose. We did the 2016 legislation in great part, to encourage and facilitate Deschutes County, which was an opt-out county, to opt in. And so they were unique in that way, but they're also unique in another way, and some folks might disagree, but the EFU and the zoning in Deschutes County is very unique, and I think that's a fair word. It's kind of a mess. But I do hear your message. I do hear your message. It's just that we have a very unique environment in Deschutes County that doesn't translate anywhere else, and coming up with unique ways to deal with that in statute is very challenging.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. I am curious if there are other counties that are not opt-out counties that are imposing time, place, and manner regulations on cannabis growing on EFU land. And if you could just identify them, that'd be great.
Co-Chair Leininger, yes, there are. But to my knowledge, no other county is imposing the land use process.
Right.
So we have, for example, Clackamas, Lane, a variety of have adopted time, place, and manner regulations that also apply in the EFU. I think you may hear people complain about those, but probably not anything like what you've heard here. because I do believe Deschutes is the only one using the full mm-hmm. process that you've heard about.
So then a follow-up question on that is, I understand that if we were to say no regulation of cannabis grows on EFU lands, that that would affect the opt-out counties, and that's a separate set of decisions that was made in a prior session. I would love to have your work group consider whether there's a way to curb time, place, and manner regulations on counties that have not wholly opted out as one way to make it a little bit more institutionalized in law, but in statute, without undoing the bargain that was kind of hard wrought in 2015.
And Kutcher Leininger, that's the real challenge, because if we the risk of doing that type of restriction in statute that applies across the board to the state is you drive more people into opt-out, and we were trying to put more incentives to repeal opt-out. So it's a real delicate balance in terms of solving one struggle without creating other struggles that don't exist today.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you have that meeting coming up. Will there be legislators participating? Would that be useful? And if so, maybe you can get back to us on that issue.
You know, I'll probably want to talk with Jenny from the Farm Bureau about whether she wants to have legislators present.
Great. And I would like to really thank the Farm Bureau and Mr. Cyrus on behalf of the Deschutes County Farm Bureau, but also Jenny Dresser on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau. I feel like that group has really embraced this changing situation in a way that's pragmatic and helpful. And again, you know, I appreciate your being here. You've engaged in a lot of great ways in this process, so hopefully we can get this resolved in an enduring way this coming week.
And if I could just add one last comment, Co-Chair, thank you. It'll be really important for the Jenny and the rest of the stakeholders from Deschutes County to make sure and to ensure that no one is present for that meeting that has a currently pending application, because at that meeting will be probably the chair of the county commission, and they have a quasi-judicial role, and we don't want to create ex parte and other complications. So it would be good to have folks from the Deschutes County Farm Bureau and other folks that actually don't have an active thing going on.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you for putting that forward. Does anyone have any follow-up questions for Mr. Beauvais? Senator Cruz.
Just kind of a curiosity, Rob, to a degree here, because we keep talking time, place, and manner. And, for example, if you have something that's EFU, but it's also rural residential currently, and you want to go in and establish a pig farm in the middle of that, that's a problem. And it would probably be denied simply because it's extraordinary and adding something new. However, if everybody around there is growing raspberries and you buy a piece of land and decide to plant raspberries, you know, the time, place, and manner is taken care of. So I guess, you know, I mean, we're talking greenhouses, okay? You know, I don't want to get too restrictive on what we, on our definitions there, but it's a common sense approach to what is should be allowed and what is consistent with existing practices. It shouldn't matter what the crop is. It should be consistent with existing practices. Just because it's marijuana shouldn't change that.
And Co-Chair Leininger, Senator Cruz, I hear what you're saying there. And Deschutes, as you probably know, is just, I mean, there's this famous quote about if you've seen one Oregon county, you've seen
yes.
one Oregon county. Well, if you've seen one Oregon county's land use plan, you've seen one Oregon county's land use plan. And I don't want to insult Deschutes or whatever, but whoever was making the decisions about what was in rural residential, what was in EFU, what was in residential in Deschutes, whenever those decisions were made, I don't know what they were consuming.
Yeah.
But it's just...
Madam Chair, my point is there should be a common sense solution to this. I don't want us to get too prescriptive county versus county. I mean, the design was to let the counties build a system that worked for them, and I really don't want to step on that. I just want to make sure that there's fairness in their decision process. Would you agree, Rep. Helm?
Well, Madam Chair, would you like me to answer that question?
I think it's your choice.
Well, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I value his opinion on this issue. So.
Okay, sure.
Absolutely. Uniformity across the state and in the overall goals of the land use system, I think, is what Senate Bill 100 envisioned and what has been strived for. Unfortunately, in this case, you know, the simplest thing, unfortunately, is to take the permission away, because then you get treatment of marijuana as a crop being exactly the same in all counties. And that's fair enough. But Mr. Bovet points out the conundrum, which is, if that happens, then folks who have invested money in land and building out their land to do this may have their livelihood ripped out from under their feet by a county commission that decides, well, if we can't regulate them into the ground, we're just going to opt out. Mm-hmm. You know, that seems unfair to me, too.
Okay.
All right. That's very easy.
Yes, please, Senator Farioli.
At the risk of stepping between the good representative and the good senator, part of the way we were able to encourage people in counties that had a high vote against Measure 91 was to give them the opportunity for time, place, and manner. And I think the assumption is that they would be reasonable requirements. And so the question I think before us is, what are the definitions of reasonable? And so that is a swamp that we probably won't drain this legislative session or any other. So the real conundrum here is, is Deschutes County acting within its current authority legally? And if that's not the case, and I think there are some implications that are in the law about whether they are acting legally, and we can have a conversation about the specific line that I'm referring to, or is the only solution a preemption? And the history of preemptions in this building is also pitched. It depends on, you know, whose preemption you're talking about. I mean, we've got several preemption debates going on in this building now. I would hope we would be able to come to a ground that is a middle ground, where the applicants don't feel like they're seeing an opt-in county use ordinances to prohibit what they say they allow. So there is, I think, a place where we need to be clear as a joint committee. You know, you shouldn't opt in if your intention is to prohibit. Probably be more honest to opt out if that were the case. I'm not really worried about having people who have got approvals reside in a county who opts out and forecloses those opportunities, because we have Measure 47 that resolves those issues in court. And I don't think any county could reasonably expose itself to that kind of liability, because they will lose those issues in court. So it really behooves all the parties to come together and resolve these questions of reasonableness without, you know, I think I'll be very interested in hearing the product of the working group that sounds like it's coming together next week in this building. And I'm betting they'll come up with a solution, because all of the alternatives really are bad.
Thank you. I think perhaps Senator Brzozinski has a comment, or did I miss?
No, you didn't. Madam Co-Chair, I apologize. Our Senate Judiciary Committee had to continue its work to complete it, and we just did, and so I apologize coming in late and also to this discussion, but I'm glad to hear Senator Farioli bringing to our attention regarding the land use issues, and I believe this is basically on Dash 11. I know a number of us had visits today, meetings with individuals that spoke last week regarding how the Deschutes County has been operating. I must tell you, I'm taken back because we had a conversation last week regarding the public records and the department for their planning somehow making public the floor plans, etc. And I received a letter, and I believe many of us received a letter dated April 12th from the Board of Commissioners basically stating that that is not the case, that they were clearly not doing that. Unfortunately, I now have information that they are, in fact, still up online floor plans. And I'm really wondering, I know, Rob, you're just a, let's say, a messenger for the group, and I didn't get a chance after meeting with the group this this afternoon, but they do have a lobbyist for the Deschutes County, and it lists Courtney Johnson, who's with PacWest, and so I'm assuming PacWest, at least from the Capital Club, is reflected as being their lobbyist for the county as an independent lobby group. And I would love to have them or someone else come before this committee and explain the differences here, because it does seem, as what Senator Ferrioli is referring to on land use here, it seems to me that we have a violation of state law of putting people at grave risk, because if someone who wants to do bad can actually get the floor plan and know exactly where things are located within the building, it makes it much more attractive, let's say, if someone wanted to take some type of covert action. And actually, one of the things that we're very concerned with is making sure there's safety for everyone in the community, including the operators of these facilities.
Yes, that's a good point. Senator?
Madam Chair, on a related issue, this is a question for Mr. Bovet, but it bears on the issue at hand. Systems development charges are not taxes. They are fees, and we've had a lot of opportunity to explore the purposes to which systems development charges may be put. And all of them are related to services provided to the burdened property. So if you have a systems development charge, people should be happy to explain what is the system being developed and how do the charges relate to the services being provided. So if there are systems development charges being levied on exclusive farm use land, I'd be happy to have a conversation with somebody about what are the services provided, how do the charges relate to the provision of those services, because that's what systems development charges have to do, you know, and that disclosure will be eye-opening. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Well, I don't see any more questions for you, Mr. Bovet, but thank you very much for your willingness to come forward and describe the work group plan that is in place. And you can see, and hopefully the commissioners and others representing Deschutes County are able to see that this committee has a lot of strong feelings about the need to make sure landowners and operators of cannabis facilities are being treated fairly in the county. And there are some real questions about whether that's happening under the current approach. So thank you so much. You can go ahead and have a seat.
I can leave the hot seat now.
Yeah, I know. That's
it's quite warm.
All right. Thank you. So we have gone through the witnesses signed up who identified that they wanted to discuss the Dash 11s. And then we had the opportunity to hear Mr. Bovet, who is the person most closely associated with county policy, who is in the room right now, provide some perspective on next steps. Next, we're going to move to some people who have identified themselves as being either neutral to or concerned about Senate Bill 1057. And for that, we have Peter Gendron, Anthony Taylor, and Cindy Etzel. You could come forward now. We are eager to hear your thoughts, and you needn't confine them to the Dash 11s, because this is a general hearing on Senate Bill 1057. Please go ahead in any order. Just state your name for the record when you begin.
Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, I'll start then. My name's Anthony Taylor, and I am president of Compassionate Oregon Patient Advocacy Group for medical marijuana patients. I like some parts of 1057. I think the trade show section is good. I think involving agriculture in testing is good. But this bill has been often portrayed as a technical fix bill for OLCC. And with that in mind, I think we need to pull out the things that deal with the medical marijuana people. Plant limits always hurt patients. And I don't care if it's the 6 mature marijuana plants or the 48 or the 96, it hurts patients. And when you start to try and limit immature plants, which 2 years ago we decided was, we didn't need to limit immature plants, now we're limiting them. That's going to be a nightmare for law enforcement. If they walk into a garden that's allowed to have 192 immature plants, and they're all 8 feet tall, and they got to go through and count them and then individually determine if they're in flower or not, that's not a good use of resources. So I think we need to just kind of forget about that part of this bill. The other part of the bill I'd like to talk about a little bit is the metric system. Now, Compassionate Oregon has always supported streamlining the reporting of cannabis cultivation, processing, and distribution in this state. But a patient, applies for their card, spends, if their primary care physician won't sign their authorization, they spend about $150 for the doctor visit. Then if they don't receive any discounts on their card, they pay $200 for their card. If they're their own grower, they also have to pay $200 for a grow site registration fee. So now, just to get started, they're at $550. You add to that the $480 annual fee for metric reporting. I mean, we're going to require the patients and the industry of this state to report into a system that they have to pay for to report into. That's unfair for everybody, patients and industry. The medical marijuana reporting system is a free system. The state spent $1 million to put it together. And, you know, we have some data in there. But you add that $480, now a patient is at over $1,000 to get their medical marijuana card and be able to grow their own medicine. You add to that $400 to $800 for the state certified scale that's required for metric tracking, and then any other auxiliary or ancillary equipment that's required for the reporting system, like the proper computer interface and that sort of stuff. Man, that's a burden on patients. And I don't think it's a fair burden on patients. So should we proceed with bringing everybody under metric, we need to do as the director of the OLCC suggested when they were talking about licensing all of them and sunrise this program. So it doesn't take, it doesn't, its operative date isn't until July 1st of 2018. And then we need to waive the fees for reporting into metric for at least 3 years. This might give us some time to get this going, because we're talking about training 9,000 medical marijuana growers in the art of metric data entry. Now, for somebody that's growing only 36 plants, that may not be too big of a job, but it's going to be time consuming and it's going to be expensive. You know, there was a time when it only cost $100 to get a medical marijuana card, and if you designated somebody else to be your grower, that was an extra $50. And I think we have created a system here that is burdensome to patients, and we really need to re-examine that. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
All right, why don't we go ahead with you, Mr. Gendron, and we can ask questions of the panel at the end.
Thank you, Chair Leininger, members of the committee. For the record, Pioneer Pete Gendron, Sunny Valley, Josephine County, Oregon. Been down there raising my family for 2 decades now. I would like to address some of the issues, especially in the newest iteration of 1057, the -14 amendment set, but I want to bring the conversation back to really what should have been the focal point the entire time, and that is that we are talking about a plant that is now required under state law to be treated as any other farm use commodity. In my home county of Josephine right now, one of the proposals that's on the table is eliminating all OLCC licenses on all rural residential properties. When we're talking about integration, a proposal that has modified itself several times this year alone, one of the things that seems to fall on deaf ears is that in counties like Josephine and our neighboring county of Jackson, the development, the licensing of the growers that currently exist under the medical program, even under the OLCC's micro canopies, would be prohibited. If the intent is, as I've heard my colleagues on the OLCC say, I sat on licensing compliance and enforcement there, to capture these growers into the program, we have two opposing sets of interests here. The one that says we need to bring them into the metric system under OLCC micro canopies or bring them into metric for commercial production. Then we have the counties that are objecting to that, preventing it not just in the case of Deschutes County with EFU, but in the case of Douglas County, every place, or Josephine and Jackson, where rural residential is even on the table. You're talking about thousands of growers in each of these counties individually that would be negatively impacted by this. As a result of that, I want to go back again to Measure 67, passed in 1998, which has allowed mom-and-pop growers to grow their own six plants on their own property for their own use for the last almost 20 years. Those people should be allowed to continue doing that. Under this proposal, I, growing for my next-door neighbor who's a Vietnam vet who doesn't own a computer, would be required to enter into this system. I'm already in the reporting system for the Oregon Health Authority. I had to set up a completely separate account just for him with an email I had to create just for that purpose, because the OHA did such a bad job of administering this program that I have not to date been able to account for all of my cardholders on the same reporting account, which was the agreement and was passed last year, but has not been implemented yet. As we're talking about sunlighting new proposals over the course of any amount of time, we should look at the effectiveness the agencies have had in administering the current requirements that legislature has handed to them. Another one of these failings is currently on the table, and the failure of the OHA to properly hire and train new certifiers for the ORLAP program, causing yet another bottleneck. We could be looking at some of the better aspects of Senate Bill 1057 and House Bill 2198, and looking at the task force, the subcommittee that's working on 2198 right now, and integrating these in a way that will allow small medical producers to continue providing for themselves and their neighbors the way they've been accustomed to and that state law has required, while still treating this farm use crop with the deference that's required. I don't want to see the state and the counties get involved with a head-to-head battle on this. I live in a home rule county, and the people there, by and large, are proud of their independence. At the same time, we understand the requirements of the state legislature via the Cole memo, and the fact that even though cannabis is Schedule II in Oregon, it still remains Schedule I federally. So we understand that, and I maintain and have since the beginning of this process that the best way to gain the compliance that you want is to make it easier, not harder, for people to participate in the program. When you make it cost prohibitive, when you require a 75-year-old who doesn't have a computer to learn how to use a system that he has no kind of interface with, or a parent of a 12-year-old girl, another one of my patients, who has neither the time nor money for that, replace the burden on me, who's already providing them a fantastic service and saving the state, by the way, thousands of dollars on each of these prescriptions each year, you're talking about a financial impact. Just looking at the number of cards that are going to be regulated, for example, when you go from six plants in a household to 12, it's mom's card or mom and pop's card. you're effectively cutting the number of people that are going to be reporting into the metric system in half. It excludes them from the retail market, but these are not people that are generally interested in participating in the retail market. When you cut that cost in half, you're also cutting the number of people that are going to be reporting into the system down. You're making it more cost-effective to the state. At the current number is a 24 in the city and 48 in the country, with 48 and 96 being allowed under grandfathering. You're looking at a small increase when you cut that in half. You're doubling that when you cut it in half again. You're doubling it when you cut it in half again. You're going up to in the neighborhood of 9,000 people that would have to be reporting if you cut it down to single card grows. I don't believe that that is a small cost to the state when it comes to tracking and evaluating compliance there, and I think that needs to be considered in the budget. Since that is such a major issue this year, I'd like to ask you to consider this not just from a compassionate point of view, but also from a budgetary point of view. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I think let's go forward with Ms. Etzel, and then we'll have questions.
Cindy Etzel. I live in Jefferson, Marion County. I am so thankful for the gentleman that spoke earlier about what's going on in Deschutes County. It breaks my heart. I feel very blessed to live in Marion County and not to have to deal with that. But there is issues. I wrote an email. I want to tell Representative Fahey, thank you for forwarding it on to my representatives. Do no harm. I feel that this is what's happening to the mom and pops such as myself. You're asking that our medicine be put under OLCC. My medicine is primarily, my marijuana is my medicine. You're asking to put on something that most people wouldn't even use. Would you put it into a pharmacy, into the OLCC? I don't think so. You're putting marijuana into OLCC. Would you put the pharmacy into that also? This is my medicine. This is what I'm saying. OMP has been dissected and stripped and ripped apart. When I came into this program, it was pure. It was easy. It's far from that now. Far from that. OMP needs to be patient-driven and not a commodity. As some of those that want to enter into that, then let it be so. But it's sad because this is what's happening now. Because now it's a commodity. I'm thankful that the farming industry is looking at it that way. It should be that way if that's to be. But leave us small folks alone. Bottom line, I have researched and learned how to make medicine since 2010. From growing a plant that I didn't know nothing about. I have patients that want me to grow from them because I'm an organic grower. But yeah, it makes it difficult and continues to make it more and more difficult to do the right thing because there's these constantly being here. It takes me 2 to 3 weeks to be able to recover from being able to talk or be able to be in these meetings. I don't have a problem talking in front of people. But because of the problem that I have physically, sometimes it takes me a little bit longer. Please leave those who have been grandfathered in that have no complaints from clients, from patients, to be left alone. The gentleman that spoke before said that in most committees, action is taken when there's a complaint. There has not been any complaint against what I do. Against our grandfathered farm. OMP seems to be a bargaining chip for those that are behind the scenes. I see no evidence that the sick and the dying are being considered for anything, but it has caused more stress. There are grandfather petitions that will be collateral damage and the unintended consequence. I feel it in my heart, and I think Mr. Helms feels the same way, and the different people who have spoke. To too many wanted to profit from the marijuana that provided a market that have done a disservice to the many of folks like myself and that just want to grow what I consider a sacred plant. It's healing medicine, folks. Healing medicine. I just ask that you guys consider those young, those people. There's too many things that are going on that aren't being considered. The spirit, the heart, and the purity of what's wanting to be done in the right manner. Do right. Please do right by the patients and those that are sick and dying in the communities. Let them die with dignity and without having any stress over the medicine that they use. Thank you. I appreciate each one of you because I know that I see the differences in your conversation and I see that you're becoming more and more open-minded. And for that, I am thankful.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I really appreciate your testimony. Do we have questions for this panel of witnesses? Okay, thank you so much. Next up we have Chris McAllister, Nikki Terzieff, and then Pete Kramer. If you would like to come up with this panel, you may, or if you would prefer to come up at the end, then that's also okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Madam Chairs, esteemed legislators, members of the public, my name is Chris McAllister. Before you are five amendments that I asked to be drafted regarding patient values, patient needs, and the future of Oregon medical cannabis. As a caveat, I would like to say that Amendment 19-19 is not what I asked for. It should read, the task force on the separation of regulatory marijuana programs, and it was to work under solidifying the Ogden Memorandum, protecting the needs of patients as not as a commodity but as a service and a healthcare need, and without the delineations set forth by this task force, I feel like we're swimming in the dark. I'd like to draw attention to the very back of it, section 36D, which is line one on the last page. It says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, that the Oregon Health Authority may not impose a fee or collect a fee from a marijuana grow site as defined until the task force meets with its conclusion. And so the reason why I asked for something of that nature is we have a lot of items going forward that have modified the program well beyond what it was supposed to be, and it was in the name of the Cole Memorandum. As a follower of the Ogden Memorandum and as a creator of medicines under the FDA's Title 21 medical delivery systems, I have done a lot of research in regards of what my patients need, the types of liabilities that I'm willing to and not willing to take on, and I feel like these types of items are missed when we talk about people who provide things for recreational use. Now, with that being said, I support number 16, which, though I would like to ask that instead of free members, I ask that it be made up of 51% patients as pursuant to the common model for health advisory boards. This would allow the people who are actually affected, not just the people who regulate or get paid to work out the rules, get to have a say on the needs of the programs. I would also like to draw attention to dash 18, which speaks to expedited care. My mother died December 28th, 2016. She was waiting for her card. She had her papers signed. She had just recently moved home with me into my house where I hospiced her. But we could not prove residency under the current state lines because she just came from the UK. So she's hospiced at my house, but the paperwork does not follow. And so she was apprehensive of even taking the things because she did not want to get me in trouble. She did not want me to go to jail for taking care of someone who was dying. So we did what we could within the spirit of the law. With that distinction, I'd like to point out that there's a difference between black market and gray market. Black market is something where A lot of people never intended to follow the rules, and they'll take a lot of loopholes and do whatever they need. Whereas gray market is stuff that was produced legally, produced in the spirit of the law, and then with no outlet, no ability to get rid of the items, whether it's donating my extra to the dispensary, where we used to create a program with the late Jason Thomas where he would donate it, and I would walk it to them, so we would not be violating the transportation rules. They would not be allowed to be charged for it. That became illegal under some of these rule changes where we weren't allowed to give away things from a dispensary for free. So these are the types of things that I felt needed to be conveyed. And House Bill 2198, there was a speaking of the Cannabis Committee for the regulation. I believe I caught the bill right. I asked in one of these bills, I believe it's the 16, that those powers that were going to be given to the committee be assigned to the ACMM. That body was created in 2006 to represent us. If there were more patients, if there were more items needed to be discussed, that's the body that should be doing it. Representative Buckley said that before he stepped down that he was part of the reason why our fees went up. And so we have tried to take care of people free of charge. We have tried to utilize the dispensary system when it was only OMMP. And we have tried to sustain while sharing space that was created in the name of healing and has been now for the price points of grams and pounds. So while nothing I'm saying to you is probably new, I do appreciate your guys' work, your guys' thought process, and I would really like to see that these amendments that are talking about pricing, number 17, it reduces it to $60. That's double what I believe California's price is, and we have stricter programs. Number 15, that's talking about reducing immature plants. I like the 1-to-3 ratio because I buy from seed. A lot of the times that I'm charged seeds from these for-profit shops, I'm paying anywhere between $160 to $900 for seeds. Now, given that I don't collect money from my patients, that kind of makes it out of reach for me. So then that's not even accounting for males. So if I get 5 males out of a 6-pack, like I did one of the 2 packs I've gotten, it doesn't really help me while trying to weed out unless I'm a breeder. So these are the types of things I'd like to have considered. And I feel like the ACMM, while not necessarily listened to by OHA, could be better if it was given more powers, more responsibilities, and is actually has a means to be listened to. Not just an advisory role that's sometimes taken into consideration, but before these rules are actually passed, that they're actually considered. So I do appreciate your time, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to work on that.
Thank you so much. Why don't we go to Ms. Terzieff, and then we'll take questions at the end.
Thank you, Chair Langinger, members of the committee. Good evening. Nikki Terzieff here on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. A broad, again, sweeping support for 1057. I was actually excited to see the Dash 19s myself. I thought maybe we had an opportunity for a continuation of conversation around a unified regulated marketplace. And I'm sorry to hear that wasn't what you expected. That does happen sometimes around here. There are a couple of amendments that I think very specific. I would like to draw your attention to. There's an amendment that was put forward by Senator Farioli looking at regulation and standards for financial actors. It doesn't necessarily solve our larger financial problem, but we do believe as we march forward, setting some standards around there would be a good conversation to have and to pursue. I think I'd like to just go back, and I'll be very brief. I think I'd like to just go back and say tracking is going to be imperative. Making it affordable, making it enticing, having folks participate, absolutely imperative as well. So whatever we need to do to thread that needle, I would really urge this committee to start thinking creatively. I think we've tried a lot of different approaches and had a lot of different conversations, and I know that it's been very difficult and emotional at times, but we are in a changing world, and the sands beneath us are shifting, and I think as we look forward to the next few years, something like a task force and an ongoing conversation may serve us well, in particular as this committee is not likely to be back together, and we will be in diaspora, if you will. It's going to be important for us to be able to have some real strong foundations and standards that we can bring to those other legislators and other committee members. Senator Prezanski, congratulations on 1042 and moving that conversation forward in judiciary. And listening this morning, some of the comments of the colleagues on the committee, it was clear to me we've been very lucky to have you all put together, to have the time for education and to have the informed conversations we've been able to have with each of you. And we'll have a lot of work to do moving forward in the next few years with another 80 legislators or so. And so I would urge us to consider what the most solid foundation can be moving forward.
Thank you. Great. Do we have any questions for these witnesses? Nope. All right. Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. Mr. Kramer, welcome.
It's like the warm spring is compact.
Thank you, committee members. And so, my name is Pete Kramer, PK. I'm with the Mercy Center. I've been filming these meetings over the years. I'm a patient, grower, and an activist trying to show the people what's happening, how your reactions to the patients are. With these regulations and restrictions that you put on the patients in fees, grow up, it's a plant. Use the common sense. This is medicine for the patient. Now, the plant count and the metric system, that's not helping the patient. Patient needs quality medicine. And sometimes it's a quantity of quality medicine that brings the relief and the quality of life in the, to the patient. I agree with Anthony Taylor and Pioneer Pete and the other people that have spoken for the patients. Please. Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you. Committee members, are there any questions for this witness? All right. Thank you, Mr. Kramer. Appreciate it.
I did send a testimonial to you. I hope you'll read it. It's about Section 20 of the state constitution that all citizens should be treated equally.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Have a great night. All right. Committee members, are there any follow-up thoughts on conversation that we've had this evening? Senator Prezanski.
Madam Co-Chair, I'm not sure if we have this information or not, but hearing of some of the issues regarding the fees on the medical program, we had this discussion previously last session about the use of those fees through other programs in the Department, Oregon Health Authority. I'm wondering if we could get an update as to what the last thing I saw was like $18 million that was diverted from fees from the medical program that were being used in three or four different other programs the agency has charged to. I know the Ways and Means process is going on. Kind of interested as to whether that money is going to be available for the medical program or if it's still going to be diverted into other uses. Since diversion is part of the discussions, I just figured we'd talk about diversion of fees.
That's a fair point. All right. Mr. Crawford, if you could take a look at that and give us an update on where things stand with that issue, I'd appreciate it. Any other comments for the group? Okay. With that, we will adjourn the meeting and see you again in perhaps next week. Thank you. Perhaps next week. Thank you. Again in.